big show for you here. It is the week two Sunday recap show. We got to slog through a bit of a rough Sunday night showing with a couple of high school offenses out there. But after that, then Chris Allen joins the show for a big, fat, juicy week two Sunday recap show. We got our bust player of the week. We got our boom player of the week. Joe Burrow injured. What are we doing about that? A wild NFC East matchup between the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants. The Patriots and the Dolphins offense show signs of life. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. We have a massive Week 2 Sunday slate to talk through, but first, we got to slog through the Sunday night solo recap here. Falcons 22, Vikings 6. Of all the football games that ever were, that was one of them. I said this on social media at one point during the game. That felt kind of like a... like a charming game between two middling to solid high school programs. It's almost something quaint, you know, when the sport gets distilled after like the fireworks show that we got last week. And I know nobody wants me to put lipstick on the pig. Okay. I totally get that. You know, after the fireworks show that we got last week between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, to see two teams to varying degrees trying to figure it out with their second year inexperienced quarterbacks, as the defensive players were kind of showing out at different points here. This is one of those like, hey, don't forget those guys get paid too sort of games. But yeah, it just, you know, when if you go to high school football games at all, you ever played high school football, you any like level investment in high school football, it can sometimes be, unless you've just got, you know, like high school level Derrick Henry on one of the teams, you know, and you're just mowing people down. It can just be games like that. It's a lot of fits and starts, and you're just kind of hoping, like, you know, Chris Collinsworth even said it, I think, at one point early in the third quarter, like, this game's going to break open with like a special teams return or a defensive pick six. It's like, I have been a part of too many high school games like that. And it feels, you know, it's just somebody's got to get a weird break on a weird play. This did feel like one of those games. Unfortunately for the Vikings, that never happened, and they never got into this game. As always, we're going to start with the winners of this football game. And for the Atlanta Falcons, I don't have like a ton of offensive insight to throw out here. You know, for Michael Penix, obviously it wasn't the most beautiful game in the entire world. He goes 13 of 21, just barely over 61% of his passes were completed, 6.4 yards per attempt. But this is a really difficult defense to play against, obviously, in Minnesota. You've got both of your starting wide receivers coming off shoulder injuries in Darnell Mooney and Drake London. Neither of those guys pop up for anything major here. The passing game just wasn't a big part of it. And frankly, because it didn't need to be. Right away from like the first drive of this game, this was established like, oh, this is going to be one of those Bijan Robinson games. Okay. You know, Raheem Morris said, after last week's effort against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's not who we are. We don't run the football like that. Well, yeah, no kidding. You definitely didn't in this one. Over 100 yards rushing, 6.5 yards per carry for Bijan Robinson in this game. Tyler Allgeier even gets in the mix too. This is just, again, one of those where you can just put the ball in the belly of these guys over and over again. I think Tyler Allgeier, that last touchdown that he got, the only touchdown of the game, excuse me, I shouldn't even say the last, the only touchdown of the game, that was one where the Vikings defense definitely let it happen so that they could try to get the ball back to their offense. A lot of good that did, by the way. These two guys are just really, really, really good NFL running backs, especially Bijan Robinson. Just an absolute freak show game from him, making something out of nothing. You know, he's one of those guys where obviously you lose a right tackle like Caleb McGarry, who's one of their better run blockers right at the start of the season, and his backup Storm Norton goes out. There was a lot of talk about that, okay, right leading up into the season. He's just so good at making people miss in these small, narrow windows that it really doesn't matter. And I definitely noticed some different layers conceptually to the run game this year, which is something I wanted to see after they were the just most kind of, I don't want to say boring, but just pretty straightforward outside zone team last year. I think they've started to mix up a few things. They've gotten the tight ends involved a lot in the blocking game this year too. So I've been excited about what I've seen out of the Falcons run game, like from a process standpoint in week one. And then you really saw the results in this one against a Vikings defense that I think was pretty clearly going to just try to pin their ears back and hunt Michael Penix in the pocket. They were able to kind of slow play some of those with these longer developing Bijan Robinson runs. And again, he just made them pay over and over and over and over again. So shout out to him. This is why he was, to me, the second overall player in fantasy football drafts. And with the Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow situation right now, if we redrafted today, Bijan probably goes first overall, I would have to say. By the way, speaking of the Joe Burrow thing, and this will be the last thing I say before transitioning to the Vikings. I know we mentioned it later in the show with Chris Allen. Didn't have the full reporting on that. It sounds like the Joe Burrow injury might be more serious than maybe I painted it when we get to that portion of the show. So obviously just keep it dialed into the podcast and all of our Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Fantasy products over the course of the next 24, 48 hours as we try to find out more. Joe Burrow might be facing like a 3-month absence, putting him out till December. So we'll break all that stuff down. Obviously with Justin Boone tomorrow, we'll break that down in the People's Panic Meter. I'm sure we might even hopefully have news by 5 p.m. Eastern when we go live for that show tomorrow. But we put it off long enough. Let's talk about the damn Vikings in this game. All right. So I do kind of want to put some respect on the Falcons defense before I talk about the Vikings. This tweet we've got from @MySportsUpdate. Falcons defense versus J.J. McCarthy and the Minnesota Vikings. 6 sacks, 2 interceptions, 3 fumbles, one of which was lost. A 37.5 pass rating, 198 total yards of offense. The Vikings were put on a little bit of notice by this Falcons defense, which, by the way, had a better week one showing that I think anybody was expecting. You know, I'm willing to at least be open-minded that this Falcons defense isn't embarrassing, which, by the way, lost AJ Terrell at one point in this game. They're maybe only clear-cut above average starting cornerback right now. Watts played a really good game here. Xavier Watts, obviously their rookie, just really good overall performance by their rookie class. James Pierce Jr. got after, Jalen Walker got a sack. Bill Bowman was another rookie from this class that got an interception. This does feel like a unit that's playing fast, that's playing aggressive, pinning their ears back when they're rushing the passer, and maybe has a bit more variation in the coverage looks than we saw last year. So I'm not just going to come in here and rail on the Vikings, because I do think that the Falcons defense deserves credit. Like, again, these guys get paid too. The Vikings defense, they get paid too. Brian Flores gets paid a lot of money. He's highly compensated to put young quarterbacks through the blender, and he's done so to Caleb Williams and Michael Penix in back-to-back weeks. And on this Falcons defense, I think they might be a unit to just not pencil in as an immediate, you know, doormat for fantasy football purposes. That being said, let's rail on the Vikings here a little bit, because that was a brutal offensive showing. If you were kind of crossing your fingers, hoping for some second half revival, you know, fourth quarter magic like we saw at J.J. McCarthy last week, didn't get it. Here's how the Minnesota Vikings drives went in the second half. I love reading these off on the primetime recaps. Punt, punt, fumble, punt, interception. Boom. Game over. I don't know, man. I mean, we've had one good quarter of action from J.J. McCarthy and not much else to hang your hat on right now. And it's just like they're getting off the field like so fast right now. I'm pretty sure this source is fully updated. Time of possession per drive right now, the Minnesota Vikings are dead last. Average drive for them lasts 2 minutes and 11 seconds. By the way, the 31st team is the Baltimore Ravens with 2 minutes and 19 seconds. I think those drives are ending a little bit differently. The Vikings are taking 2 minutes and 11 seconds to go nowhere. The Baltimore Ravens are taking 2 minutes and 19 seconds to score friggin' touchdowns. If you look at drives that end with a score, the Vikings are 27th. You look at EPA per play, they're 31st. They're just barely ahead of the Tennessee Titans, who are starting a rookie quarterback. Now, obviously, J.J. McCarthy, for all intents and purposes, I don't want to call him a rookie quarterback because he's been a whole year in an NFL building, right? Like, he's not a rookie, but this is his first time getting any experience, and it just looks like not only does it look like for the most part the game is too fast for him, except for that fourth quarter, it also just looks like he's not really getting a lot of zip on the football, you know? And this is an offense that there's a lot of good throws to be had here. And it just, outside of a couple of moments to Justin Jefferson, there's just not a lot going on here. The Adam Thielen trade, by the way, is aging extremely well for the Carolina Panthers. He's done not a whole lot for the Minnesota Vikings at this point in his triumphant return, 2 for 26. Getting Jordan Addison back, not next week, but week four. Is that really going to be everything, like cure all that ails them? I don't think so. TJ Hawkinson, a complete ghost in this game. Pretty concerning effort here by the Minnesota Vikings. And Kevin O'Connell looked like a guy who was exasperated at times, looked like a guy who was maybe looking back on the other side, looking over at Kirk Cousins on that sideline and thinking, remember the good old days. Look, this is a process. Like with all things, we got to be patient, got to give it time, but it's getting bleak. It's looking pretty bleak right now for Minnesota. If you have Justin Jefferson, you took him in the first round, this was the risk you took. You know, I guess you could say the same thing for Drake London on the other side. He has not had a big pop-off game yet either, a player that I ranked 10th overall in fantasy, so I don't know everything. I'm an idiot too, don't worry. But yeah, just not a lot going right for Minnesota, especially with injuries. They're adding injuries to insult at the end of this game as well. Aaron Jones left the game with a hamstring injury. Backup left tackle Justin School, who is replacing Christian Darrisaw. And man, you felt that absence. He left the game late. Ryan Kelly, their big acquisition at center, who's got to be helping JJ McCarthy from a pre-snap standpoint, in addition to being the guy in the middle, like setting the offensive line, the protections, and just being an anchor there for him. He left the game at one point with concussions. So this is already a unit that you're hoping you're handing JJ McCarthy the keys to the Ferrari and say, hey, go drive it, kid. And not only does he not totally look ready to drive that Ferrari, you're also noticing like, oh, the transmission's off. The back left tire is blown back there. It's not the fully operational Death Star that I think this offense was painted out to be. And like I said, when that misfire to Jalen Naylor, when you get a one-on-one open shot like that, that's all you want from a quarterback. Like just drop that thing in there and, you know, maybe go turn the tide of that game. Maybe that turns into a touchdown, a catch and run touchdown for Jalen Naylor, who's got a little bit of speed. He misses it. JJ McCarthy does. And Kevin O'Connell just kind of looks deadpan into the camera. Hello, darkness, my old friend type of vibes there. So not great. We got to continue to track this Vikings offense and see if things coalesce around McCarthy. But right now, the signs and signals have been very bad. That's just the reality of where it is. Doesn't mean he's going to be bad forever, but right now it's bad. Things aren't looking very good outside of that magical fourth quarter against the Chicago Bears, which, man, I thought the Bears defense was going to be pretty good this year. The fact they got tore up by McCarthy in the fourth quarter and then let 50 points up to Jared Goff and the boys today, that's not looking so good either. So NFC North, it continues to be kind of a wild and weird division, especially with these two teams, Chicago and Minnesota. All right, that's going to do it for the Sunday Night Football recap. We have a great show recapping much better games from a wild week two Sunday slate. Right after this break, Chris Allen joins me to break it all down right after this. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because we have a bunch of week two action to go through here, and joining me to do just that is my guy, Chris Allen. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
I'm still reeling, man. We've seen so much action this afternoon. I don't even know how to process all of it, but let's go ahead and dive on into it. Let's see if we can make some sense of what we've seen this Sunday, because it's absolutely crazy from the early window games to some of the things that we just saw towards the back end of the later games. It's just been an absolute crazy slate of football this afternoon, but let's get into it, man.
No question. We have so much to get into. My body, my brain, my mind, my instincts, everything was not ready for that 9-game early slate window. So I thought I was like, all right, good. I got loose after week one. I'm ready to rock here. No way. That packed early slate absolutely just melted my brain. But we are going to try to talk about everything relevant that happened here on Sunday. Here's how the structure of these recap shows go. First segment, it is the games we care about the most, plus our boom and bust player of the week. Two really interesting wide receivers to talk about in that section. Second segment, these are the games we sort of care about. That's a pretty packed one as well. And then the third segment, the games that could have been an email. Even some of those email games, Chris, I actually feel like probably deserves some good stretching out, but that's what the rest of the week is for, because we have so much to get into. Before we do all that, let's get to our boom and bust player of the week. Our boom player of the week is Amon-Ra St. Brown, over 30 fantasy points in this game, because three touchdowns, 11 targets, as the Lions absolutely handle the Chicago Bears. No revenge game or whatever you want to call it for Ben Johnson. The Lions took it to the Bears, Chris, mostly because Amon-Ra St. Brown straight up balled out with three touchdowns.
And I will go ahead and pat myself on the back after calling ARSB as a lock-in play for week two. And just looking at the situation for Jared Goff, didn't have Micah Parsons in this particular game to harass him on a down-to-down basis. So seeing Amon-Ra St. Brown able to catch nine passes from Jared Goff was something that would set up, that we at least would assume this would set up a situation for that, because not having a ton of pressure for Jared Goff, allowing him to pass a bit more downfield, 9.8 air yards per attempt compared to what was essentially cut in half in week one, allows Jared Goff to find his number one wide receiver. And of course, seeing Jameson Williams also start to get involved from the passing game as well. So I'm really excited to see what this Lions offense can continue to do on a week in, week out basis. But of course, for folks that were rostering ARSB, you have to be happy with the production that you saw from him in week two.
No question. Have to be super happy with that. I can't wait to dig more into the Lions throughout the course of the week, as that was a really encouraging performance from their offense. But Chris, it can't all be good. Our bust player of the week, and frankly, there were a good amount to choose from, but we end up going with Brian Thomas Jr. here, because it's one of those games, Chris, that's bad in the box score, and it felt worse watching it in real time.
Yeah, and that was the one that I honestly thought was the most confusing, because going into this game, I thought that Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter would be fairly effective against the Cincinnati Bengals secondary. And while I thought that Trevor Lawrence had, I would say, an up and down game, 271 passing yards, three touchdowns and two picks, but at the very least, some of that yardage would go to one Brian Thomas Jr., but really just 4 for 49. And of course, I was listening to the broadcast live, because I'm about an hour outside of Cincinnati. And there were concerns, or at least questions, about Brian Thomas and his willingness to really get his body in there. Business decisions, I think, was the term tossed around a couple of times regarding Brian Thomas. And I think Liam Cohen was actually asked about that after the game. And so when you see guys like Parker Washington getting involved, Dyami Brown with the touchdown catch, and really not seeing a ton going towards Brian Thomas Jr., I do have some concerns about his, I would say, viability as a wide receiver one, especially given where we drafted him at just a few weeks ago.
No question. I mean, 54.7% of the air yards in this game, targeted twice in the end zone, comes away with just 6.9 half PPR points. That is a very big, like, process win if you like to beat TJ in this game. Rough moment there. So yeah, it's definitely a we actually have the clip of Liam Cohen talking about the plays for BTJ and some of the lack of inspiring plays going over the middle. Let's hear Liam Cohen on this one.
Yeah, I gotta go watch it, you know, and just go figure out what that, you know, was all about and what it looked like. I gotta go take a look at that.
So yeah, Coach Liam Cohen, not exactly thrilled with some of the play from BTJ. You could tell in that clip there. And this is something that's got to get better fast, because it's been an issue through 2 weeks, like not just drops and stuff like that, but just his play over the middle. And I don't want to sound too many alarm bells here, but like if I had to critique one thing about BTJ from his rookie year reception perception profile, it was his success rate versus zone coverage, particularly working like slants over the middle. That was his lowest average success rate in terms of his routes run in his rookie season. So this is something to keep an eye on, because listen, this got to get better fast. Like if you're playing in Liam Cohen's offense, it attacks the middle of the field. A lot of this stuff is set up to push the ball in the intermediate area, matriculate the ball in the kind of shorter routes there over the middle of the field. So this has to get better quickly. Something to monitor here over the next few weeks. I'm sure we will talk extensively about Brian Thomas Jr. later in the show, and of course on the People's Panic Meter with Justin Boone on tomorrow's show. But let's move into the games that we really care the most about here, starting with an absolute banger of a fantasy performance here. Cowboys 40, Giants 37. This game didn't feel like it was trending this way, Chris. And this is kind of the theme of week two, is like a lot of games kind of started slowish and then really exploded at the end. That was absolutely the case here with this overtime win for the Dallas Cowboys. Let's talk about Dallas first here. What were your impressions of the offense and just the Cowboys as a whole in this game?
So the first thing that stuck out to me specifically for Dallas on the receiving side was that we finally got to see George Pickens getting involved with the offense. I mean, 28.6% air yard share, 9 targets, and also seeing him get more involved in the red zone. Because in week one, while yes, there were a couple of targets downfield for Pickens, the hope would be that a lot of that usage would continue once the Cowboys got into scoring position and wouldn't just continue to be the CeeDee Lamb show once they got into scoring position. But seeing him also have 5 red zone targets, he comes down with one in the end zone. So while it wasn't a stellar day from a box score standpoint, at least seeing the proof of concept there, seeing Dak Prescott have that rapport with him downfield, I think that's at least something that most fantasy managers should be able to at least leave this game or this week two performance with some sense of confidence as we move into week three and beyond. So while I'm not at least super, super happy about this performance from George Pickens, I would say at the very least, I'm happy to see there's a wide receiver two, or at least potentially some more upside there for him as the Cowboys continue to roll.
I thought there were some encouraging signs from Pickens. You probably wanted a bigger game, but look, you got away with the touchdown, 68 yards. I thought a couple things that stood out to me just watching Pickens a little bit in isolation. Dak kind of missed him on like a go route win that he had. He kind of floated the ball when maybe you could have drove it. That was like sort of in the middle portion of the game. And then it floats up there. It allows the Giants DB to recover after Pickens gets open vertically. There's another point too, where, you know, it's like some of these slant wins. Then that to me last year was Pickens took a real big step against press man coverage, winning quickly, getting into his routes against press man coverage on slants. You saw some of that in this game. So it's definitely an encouraging, I think, step forward for Pickens. And when the schedule gets lighter, I think when things sort of coalesce around this offense, because they are adding like a lot of new things here, Chris, a lot of these like motions and shifts are a little bit more prevalent in this version of with Brian Schottenheimer than it was with Mike McCarthy. So I'm definitely willing to say that like it might get better for Pickens throughout the course of the year. But as the guy who had George Pickens as like the player I want in every draft and called him like the most mispriced wide receiver for most of the offseason, I'll admit that I was a little tight at times in this game. I was like, is this really like we're going to get George Pickens like sacrificial X receiver here? But we end with 9 targets. Obviously, everybody's target totals inflated in this game. But at the same time, you know, because of the overtime and everything like that. But yeah, I definitely think there's a good amount of optimism for this one coming out of it with George Pickens. I will say, like, we got to maybe dial back the Jake Ferguson tight coverage seam routes for the Dallas Cowboys. Like, dude, I know Dak loves the seam routes with the tight ends, which is why there's like always a fantasy relevant sort of tight end in Dallas. But those plays to me have not been all that prevalent so far.
Yeah, there's not a tight window throw that Dak will see that he doesn't want to try and press the ball into. So I can totally understand where a lot of those passes, I would prefer them to go to a guy with a wide area catch radius like Pickens. And we've seen him operate in those contested catch situations in the past when he was with Pittsburgh. So hopefully more of those targets go his way in the future. But at least for week two, we're happy with what we got.
No question. I will say the big winner coming out of this game to me is that like Javonte Williams shows week one was not a fluke. So
yes,
through 2 weeks, Javonte Williams is averaging just over 20 half PPR points per game. He's played 74.8% of the snaps, 77.4% share of the running back touches. Just 12.1% of his carries have gone for zero or negative yardage. Now, he did lose one touch to Miles Sanders inside the 5-yard line, which Sanders popped that like kind of goal line touchdown in. But still, you're seeing the stats on the screen right now. 18 carries, 97 yards, 6 for 33 and a touch as a receiver. I mean, it's just like, and I'm certainly in this group, and I'm going to take the L on it if he continues to play like this over the course of the year. This is like a feature back in an offense that we like that absolutely no one wanted to draft in fantasy football. And Javonte has been a really, I think it's not just like BS production. Some of it is because the offensive line's been giving them a lot of push. They averaged the most yards before contact per attempt in week one, did the Dallas Cowboys. And while I think the Giants pass rush gave the Cowboys tackles some issues in this game, Dak was definitely having to go into chaos mode a few more times than you'd like. The run game still was pretty productive with Javonte Williams just kind of being a steady Eddie force in the ground game, Chris.
Yeah, and I think going back to the offseason, I don't think that it was poor process for us to try and shy away from a guy like Javonte Williams. Because think about all of the stuff that we heard about him. It was the contract, or I'd say the lesser contract relative to the other free agent running backs that were out there on the market. They bring in a guy like Miles Sanders, who, well, I wouldn't say Miles Sanders was a world beater or anything like that from a rushing standpoint, but they bring in a veteran with a similar track record in order to compete with him. And then, of course, Jadon Blue that they wind up drafting has some of the pass catching role that you would think would wind up or have Javonte Williams come into having a, let's say, a three-man committee at best for this offense. But now in week one, seeing all of that shift, Blue is a healthy scratch. It's really just the Javonte Williams show for the past couple of weeks. And to your point, yeah, over 75% of the team's totes so far. This is not something we could predict given the breadcrumbs that the Dallas Cowboys were providing us throughout the offseason. So I'll definitely take the L on that because I was also in the same boat. But I'm kind of looking at this as a good process but bad results for a lot of people that just wanted to avoid that situation just given where we saw things headed given the offseason information.
Yeah, like, could we have gotten one positive camp report on Javonte Williams?
That we didn't even get one. I don't even remember one.
could have got just one. Yes, and as Chris mentioned, Jaden Blue's next NFL game will be his first. Let's flip over to the New York Giants here, who, I mean, if Russell Wilson probably hearing all week how, man, Brian Daboll can't wait to go to Jackson Dart. He's, like, not confirming on Sunday that Russ is the starter in week two. I mean, Russ was certainly not perfect in this game, but 450 yards, three touchdowns, a ton of vertical shot plays. Yes, obviously to Malik Nabers, who had 13 targets for 167 yards and two touchdowns. What an absolute baller. We got the like that go route that I couldn't wait to see that. You know, I've been waiting to see that Russell Wilson to Malik Nabers go route. We saw it in this game. Of course, Russell Wilson also threw the interception on a go route as well. You live by the moon ball, you die by the moon ball. But Wandale Robinson, I mean, talk about like Harmon has to take an L. I'm so mean to Wandale Robinson, like probably maybe unnecessarily. He goes out here for 8 for 142 and a touchdown on 10 targets. So yeah, shout out to Wandale Robinson. I'm a jerk and I will own the L on this one because, man, Wandale had some really impressive catches in this game.
Well, I would say from your standpoint, being the wide receiver guru that you are, it's just Wandale doesn't play the type of honorable ball from a wide receiver standpoint that we would love to see. Because in this game, 16.2 air yards per target for Wandale. Like, are we serious right now? Is this the same Wandale Robinson that we've drafted in the past to be the essentially PPR scam where you get the 8 for 88 or something along those lines? I mean, this was a completely different receiver from a usage standpoint. And I'm with you. I think that seeing Russ cook and having to and seeing less pressure in his face and allowing him to operate a bit more downfield was more or less the thing that the Giants were hoping to get out of Russ. And I think he always has those types of games in his back pocket because I remember when he faced my Bengals last year when he was with Pittsburgh, you get those situations where, okay, you're facing a team with a, I'd say, a modest pass rush or let's say league average pass rush at best, but their coverage unit is so poor, you have these type of jailbreak situations for a guy like Russ who can take advantage of poor coverage units downfield. So looking ahead at their schedule, I don't know how many other chances we're going to get to see Russ do that type of damage against another secondary. But for right now, if you've got Malik Nabers on your roster, you're happy with what you've got.
Yeah, so just to go back to the Wandale Robinson air yards point, Wandale Robinson had 162 air yards in this game. last year he averaged 82 air yards per game, so he like basically doubled up his 2024 total in this one game. And I will say I was pretty surprised because I thought the Cowboys defense played well in week one. I thought they kind of gloved it up from a zone coverage perspective, but Dak was really able to Russell Wilson was definitely able to pick more spots in it than Jalen Hurts was, and we'll obviously talk about the Eagles later. One other note from this game too: backfield usage flipped late in this game, according to Jacob Gibbs. New York York Giants week two backfield split in the second half and overtime. Snap rate was 56% to Cam Scadabo, 34% for Tyrann Tracy. Rush attempts 6, Tracy 1. So I don't know that we have like a lot of takes there, Chris, but that's definitely, and like, I'm not rushing to play either in fantasy football, but it's definitely a situation to monitor going forward.
Yes, and I think if anybody had, if they drafted Scadabo and they're sitting on their roster and they saw the -3 in the box score after week one and they tried to drop him, or they're thinking about dropping him after week two, just hold on. That's where the overreactions from week one can kind of force us into poor decisions. So I would say if you have Scadabo, if either of them, I'm holding for right now, but I'm not really in a rush to start either of them, to be quite honest. Especially, don't they play the Chiefs next week, if I'm remembering right? So it might be a tough out for the Giants.
All right, let's get to the next game here that we really care about. Bengals 31, Jaguars 27. Chris, we got to start with the Cincinnati Bengals and the unfortunate injury news coming out of this game. Joe Burrow is believed to have a turf toe with torn ligaments and is expected to be out several weeks, according to Jeremy Rausch of Fox 19 over there. Give us the state of the union, Chris. How did it feel? I mean, it felt bad to see Burrow go down, but what did the offense feel like with Jake Browning in the mix there?
It was an absolute roller coaster. I want to take everybody back. I want to say this was the 2023 season, and it was Jake Browning starting. Yeah. And Jamar Chase got banged up during that game, and I don't think he wound up finishing it. And it was the game where they played against the Vikings and had the T. Higgins windmill dunk for a touchdown. Absolute bonkers game. This felt like that. It felt like there was no hope, but then they get close, they pull things within arm's reach, and then it feels like the game's going to slip away, and they wind up pulling out the victory. So while I'm happy that the team won, it's just, how is this offense going to operate in the future? Where, yes, for folks that have Jamar Chase on their roster, seeing him have 16 targets in this game, 14 receptions, and be able to operate this team's wide receiver one, that's great. But for anybody looking to T. Higgins, even for Chase Brown, I mean, this offense operates best with Joe Burrow under center. I don't think I'm breaking any news here with that. But it's just the other pass catchers that typically get involved and come along for the ride when Joe Burrow's under center that we now have to worry about. We saw the lack of, I'd say, in sync that Browning had with T. Higgins because he wasn't able to hit him on those outbreakers and down the sideline. So I do have some general concern about this offense. And of course, looking at their upcoming schedule, I'm seeing multiple losses after a 2-0 start. So happy for the win. We won the battle, but we might have lost the war here. So we'll see. Hopefully Joe Burrow will be back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, hopefully it's just a few weeks. He doesn't have to go on IR. It doesn't sound like he's going to avoid surgery, so that's good. But in terms of the Bengals offense with Jake Browning, you mentioned that we've seen this before. And part of what we saw in that 2023 season, I think we saw just a little bit of it today, but obviously once they have a full week to implement a game plan, we'll see it even more. This offense starts to, and Zach Taylor and these guys start to push all the like buttons that people love, you know, like getting center, you know, more motion, more play action. All these things that, you know, are proven efficiency boosts for fantasy football players. Specifically with Jamar Chase, I think he's the one that will obviously avoid any sort of big fall off here. I don't know if I feel the same way about T. Higgins, of course, as you mentioned. I think he's going to take some dip here. But that being said, like, this offense does remain viable with Jake Browning because he allows them to push those buttons. And I know it's always funny when we get to the why don't they do this with Joe Burrow? It's because Joe Burrow doesn't want to do this stuff. Like, he wants to get into shotgun. He wants to like point out matchups and stuff. That being said, if you're looking for the silver lining here, I think Chase Brown, when they are able to play that way with Jake Browning, they're able to marry the run and pass game a little bit better. It feels a little bit less siloed. So there's a chance that like Chase Brown, just from like a rushing efficiency perspective, could actually improve here over the next few weeks if Jake Browning remains viable. But obviously, of course, it's never good. I don't mean to say like it's good to lose your starting quarterback, but I think we've seen with Browning under center, the bottom doesn't totally fall out. It feels kind of like, not to say the bottom is falling out in Jacksonville, but vibes are a little weird, right? Like, don't you feel as if the vibes are a little strange in Jacksonville right now? We mentioned that Brian Thomas Jr. Was our bust of the week here after 54.7% share of the air yards, targeted twice in the end zone, he drops the pass on fourth down. He was just multiple brutal moments going over the middle of the field. And like I said, that's a key portion of this offense that has to get corrected. But it was just like, like, he's afraid of contact. He's afraid of getting hit. He's like alligator arming some passes. He's coming up short. You also have Liam Cohen, like, yell. I don't think this stuff matters that much. It tends to get blown out of proportion, but like yelling at Trevor Lawrence about like, put it on his chest, put it on his chest.
Yeah.
For the pass that he was kind of high on Deami Brown. Deami Brown also drops a pass in the end zone because of an injury on the other side of the ball. Chris, this is from NFL Pro. Travis Hunter did not play a defensive snap until cornerback Jerrion Jones was injured late in the first quarter. Then Hunter finished the game with 42 snaps on offense, 37 on defense, 6 in week one. He had a defensive pass interference penalty that I thought was a little on fourth down.
I'll take
it. The Bengals game kept the yeah. I know you'll take it, buddy. Kept the Bengals game winning drive alive. But obviously this decreased his usage on the offensive side of the football. So I don't know. It's just it's a new coaching staff. Obviously, there's some things that are getting ironed out here, but certainly, like, if you expected the Jags passing game to just, like, get running right off the rip, that's not what's happened here so far in 2025.
I think if this was a different quarterback, we wouldn't have the same level of consternation regarding the Jaguars and just the entirety of their offense, because I thought throughout at least the three-ish quarters, a lot of the stuff that Liam Cohen was having Trevor Lawrence execute was actually, I thought it was pretty interesting, honestly. I mean, the screen passes to Travis Etienne, also seeing Bashal Tutin operating out of the backfield as the receiver, and of course the shimmy that he used in order to get into the end zone. I thought that was pretty sick as well, even though of course that was like gut-wrenching at the same time. But of course the pass game distribution, I mean, we talked about the lack of work or production from Brian Thomas Jr., but then of course we saw Brenton Strange getting involved, Diami Brown, Parker Washington, guys that typically we would have zero interest in from a fantasy standpoint. So kudos, I would say some kudos to Liam Cohen for getting some of his other pass catchers involved and showing that there is some level of productivity to this entire pass game offense. But of course, it's the Trevor Lawrence of it all that we keep coming back to. I mean, it's just another game where, I mean, his pass completion percentage is like hovering around 50-60%. Of course, from an efficiency standpoint, he's not really getting there. Took at least one sack, but he threw the two interceptions. Could have been a third if the ball hadn't hit the ground. So it's just this up and down play from Trevor Lawrence. Whereas if this was, let's say, a rookie quarterback or even just a younger quarterback that we had some level of hope for, we might look at this entire team and this entire outing for the Jaguars against the Bengals and say, "Oh, okay, well." Still, it's the second game for Liam Cohen. Oh, okay, it's still a young quarterback. But now, because we've had these high hopes for Trevor Lawrence, because we've put him at this type of pedestal, and of course, we look at Liam Cohen as one of the more progressive pass game coordinators, game designers in the league, all of it does tend to put this extra emphasis on what we see out there on the field for the entire offense. So I am trying to do like what you're saying and try not to take too much of this stuff to heart, because I do think better days will be ahead for him. But it's just, especially with this type of loss where you go up against the Bengals backup quarterback and still don't come away with a win, it has to be all the more concerning for Liam Cohen and the rest of this offense.
Yeah, this is one of those games from Trevor Lawrence where if you're a big Trevor defender or you're a big Trevor hater, like there's some evidence for both sides in this, because like if you're a Trevor Lawrence backer, you're going to point to some of those Brian Thomas Jr. misses. You're going to point to the Dombey Brown dropping the pass in the end zone. I think there was a couple like really nice plays for Trevor Lawrence in this game, but the two interceptions, especially I think the first one was just like, come on, dude. You can't be this deep into the league and like still making those mistakes. So and again, it's just like the bouts of inaccuracy. He's just like not a consistently accurate quarterback. So we'll see if Cohen can continue to get this thing integrated. And I mean, yeah, that's one thing that I think maybe I overlook at times with Liam Cohen last year with the Bucks, is that like he was already being dropped on top of an offense that was successful the year before. Like this is more of a full course remake here. So it might take, and this is, we're going to talk about this with the Bears too, it might take till like the back half of the season till everything feels a little bit more cohesive, because we're not quite there. Just last thing on this game before we transition, running back touches update. With Tank Bigsby officially out of the mix, Travis Etienne leads the way with 17, Bashal Tutin with 10, LaQuint Allen, the snap-eating pass-blocking back, with 2 touches as well. So I think Etienne, as long as this usage keeps up, is an every-week starter in fantasy football, and Bashal Tutin's a guy that is like a must-hold going forward as well. Let's jump to the AFC East here, Chris. I did not expect this game to be in the games that we really care about. I will admit that. But we get 60 combined points from the Patriots 33, Dolphins 27. I thought this was, after a kind of, I would say, unsettling performance out of Drake May in week one, really encouraging performance from him here. He spread the football around. 11 guys ran a route in this game for the New England Patriots. Nobody ran a route on more than 73.3% of the dropbacks, which was Kayshon Booty, the week one darling Kayshon Booty, who caught one pass, one target on just 4.5% of his routes. Now, that one catch was a touchdown, a 16-yard touchdown. So if you started if you started him in fantasy, you're like, whew, at least he made the most of that one target. But again, it just kind of goes to show that I think Drake May played a little bit of a different game in this one than he did in week one. He also ran for 31 yards as well. He had the rushing touchdown. So really big fantasy performance from Drake May against an obviously pushover Dolphins secondary.
And that's what we wanted to see from Drake May in this game, because I don't think anybody was looking at it as this is going to be the performance that's going to essentially what we saw out of Russell Wilson today. It's going to be the 400-yard passing game or something along those lines. Now, could he challenge to be in the top six, top eight of quarterbacks with his rushing ability? Absolutely. But at least for me coming into this, my hope would be that he'd be able to take advantage of this Miami pass game coverage that we saw Daniel Jones completely rock in week one. And a lot of that was borne out in the numbers. I mean, his passing success rate jumped up, adjusted completion percentage jumped up. I mean, and of course, to your point, seeing so many different receivers getting involved in the passing game, I thought, at least for me, still seeing Stephon Diggs get out there cooking a little bit there, five targets for Diggs in this game, still a little bit of a hindrance from a route running standpoint, but I'm taking this as they're still trying to get Diggs more involved into this offense as they move along. So I'm not taking too much away from him, but overall, a good performance from Drake May. You still see the rushing ability for him, and that's why you draft him in the late rounds. So overall, I think this is one of the performances that you'll want to see. And of course, since they have to play them again at some point throughout the rest of the regular season, we should see this type of performance again later on this year.
Yeah, I just like that, again, he gets a lot of different guys involved. This is a team that does not have a number one receiver. It's probably like a group of threes at best, honestly. Some nice players here, though. Some nice role players that fit well into their group. But like, if that's the type of room you have, then yeah, nobody gets more than five targets in this game. The leading target getter and leading receiver does transition us to the one kind of fantasy letdown note in this one, which is Travion Henderson owned a mere 18.5% share of the running back touches. And after a big performance from Ramondre Stevenson, like I said, leading receiver, 142 total yards. He was good on the ground game as well. Chris, tell me the story about why like Travion Henderson all of a sudden is going to just like jump up with a huge role in this offense in the next couple of weeks here. I don't have any Travion Henderson teams, but if I did, I'd be pretty nervous that I spent a, fifth or maybe, if you're lucky, sixth round pick on a guy that is was the third running back on his own team today.
Right. And that's where I'm even more concerned about his usage moving forward, because at the very least, given what we saw out of the offseason, we should have been hopeful that Henderson would have been involved in the pass game. I mean, that's all everybody was raving about during preseason and during training camp as well, about his chops as a receiver, seeing him used downfield and not just as your typical running back out of the backfield, but also being split out in the slot and also out wide. They showed some of those plays like throughout some of the offseason. But now, of course, it's Ramondre Stevenson, booging downfield for a 55-yard reception. And so now not only are we getting fewer running back carries for Henderson, but now we can't even get the pass game work. I don't see how this starts to shift moving forward. I think last year, because of Stevenson's fumbling issues, if those types of things were to persist in 2025, I could tell the story about how Henderson gets more involved. But for right now, Stevenson is still operating as a decent pass blocker, allowing Drake May to stay upright, and of course, being productive semi-productive or viable as both a rusher and a receiver. I don't see the scenario where Henderson even starts to chip away at that workload to force even, let's say, a 45-55 split at any point in the future.
I think that the bigger problem to me, Chris, because I thought that like Ramondre Stevenson was maybe getting pushed away a little too quickly. Like I still had him ranked as kind of like a top 35 running backs. I thought he'd be involved in the early downs while Henderson was like the clear, like you said, clear cut passing down back. To me, it's like I didn't expect Antonio Gibson to be like involved at all. And maybe that was just like yeah. I was an idiot to like completely overlook him, but it's not that he's crazy involved, but he's still shaving off about 15% of the backfield touches here. That yes. to me, like yeah. he needs to completely go away for Travion Henderson to even be like remotely startable in fantasy. This is definitely a guy that I think could come on in the second half of the year. Like, I think his time will come. Mike Vrabel's notoriously kind of hard on most normal rookies. He's like a slower play conservative. This is a conservative coaching staff in general. So it could just be that Travion Henderson's getting the rookie treatment. And then by week 10, 11, 12, he's really unleashed. But right now, if you have him, you got to park him on your bench and just see mm-hmm. what happens. Try not to drop him. You just got to park him on your bench and see what happens. We did see a much better offensive performance from the Miami Dolphins in this game, Chris, than we got yeah. in week one. They still lose, but the good news is, and this is something you harped on earlier today on Fantasy Football Live and last week on a recap show, the targets were at least concentrated. 72% of the targets went to Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devon Achan. So even in a game where the Dolphins dolphin around, I thought Tua made several just, again, if we're going to harp on Trevor Lawrence about mistakes, like, I mean, there is a couple of plays in here that too, it's like, brother, what are you doing? You're way too deep into your career to be making these type of mistakes. Way too deep. Way, way, way too deep. So if he's going to be doing that, it's going to be the Dolphins of it all. If the targets are at least concentrated and Devon Achane is forcing 8 missed tackles, like, then we can get some fantasy viability out of these guys.
Yeah, and that's where I would say I would leave this game. If you have Devon Achane, you draft him early. You drafted Tyreek Hill in the third-ish round or even Jalen Waddle in the fifth, sixth, somewhere in there. This is the type of performance that you would want. This is the level of opportunity that you would want for those guys. I mean, seeing them walk away with essentially 23, 24 targets combined between the three of them with less out of any of the ancillary receivers. I know Nick Westbrook-Ikhine got mixed in for maybe one or two. Same thing for the remainder, like Malik Washington, those types of folks. This is what I wanted to see. And now I get, yes, I mean, let's have some general level of concerns for Tua and his long-term health, because he did wind up taking 5 sacks in this game, especially since we noted earlier this morning that with Austin Jackson being out, it was going to be something of a tough row for Tua in this particular game. So I would say from an offensive line standpoint, let's hope the protective unit is there for him in the future. But overall, from a pass-catching standpoint, it's these three guys and hopefully nobody else from here on out. And especially for Devon Achane, I mean, brother, 10 freaking targets, especially after the performance last week. I mean, if you have Achane, you're sitting in a PPR league, you have to be thinking about now you're challenging yeah. for RB1 overall type production for this type of guy, because he doesn't have Raheem Mostert this year in order to contend with for goal line touches as he did last year. Haven't heard a ton from Ollie Gordon, Jalen Wright, and those other guys that we thought over the offseason might be something of a factor in the running game. So if you've got Devon Achane, you have to be thinking you're sitting pretty right now.
Yeah, and like, you're going to need those receiving opportunities because the run game stinks yet again this season in Miami. Just 2.7 yards per carry from Devon Achane in this game. Meanwhile, the second leading rusher is Malik Washington. Like, that's the state of the run yeah. game right now. Like, they need yeah. Devon Achane needs those screens. He needs those plays. And again, he forced 8 missed tackles. Like, he's doing his job. It's just the offensive mm-hmm. line is not good. But man, when he gets out there into space, that one, like, catching, I think the touchdown, he had the catch and run touchdown. Or oh, might yeah. have been got tackled. Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely electric in this game, and there were some really positive moments. So, again, Dolphins aren't going to be good this year, but if they're going to be bad, at least be concentrated, because then we can get some fantasy viability out of the guys that we actually care about in this offense. But that is going to do it for the games we care about most, and we will be back right after this quick break. Now, let's get into the games that we sort of care about, starting with 49ers 26, Saints 27. Let's start on the Niners side here first, Chris. I thought this was a nice showing from Mac Jones. According to mm-hmm. NFL Pro, Mac Jones targeted the intermediate level of the field, 10 to 19 air yards on 35.9% of his attempts in week 2. He was 9 of 14 there. 158 yards and two touchdowns, and he really wasn't pressured. I know the Saints defense is what it is. It didn't sound like they're stocked a bunch of pass rushers, but 23.3% of his dropbacks, he was under pressure. Four of six passes for 60 yards and a touchdown for Mac Jones there. Should just correct the record. I said 49ers 26, Saints 21 on the score there. I'm so excited about the bad, good offense in New Orleans. I can't wait to talk about them. I'm trying to force them into winning this game. But Chris, what did you think when you saw the Niners and Mac Jones in this game?
Well, we talked about it earlier this morning about the idea of Kyle Shanahan finally getting to coach Mac Jones after all of the rumors of him wanting to draft Mac Jones over Trey Lance however many years ago. But we saw Mac Jones not just be like stand there in the pocket and deliver strikes, but across the middle of the field as well. Around 44.4% of his passes went into the middle of the field, and that's why we saw Ricky Pearsall able to operate as a downfield passer for him. I mean, there were a couple of throws. I mean, he was ripping those balls like into the middle of the field, like to Ricky Pearsall. So I'm generally encouraged like with this performance from Mac Jones. And now I get it. I mean, you mentioned it at the top of this segment, going up against the Saints pass rush and also their secondary, not a ton that we should be able to take away from the stance of, well, this is how the 49ers are going to be every week because they're not going to be able to play such a weaker defense relative to the rest of the league on a week-to-week basis. But if you wanted an out, or if you wanted a first start for a backup quarterback in a situation where, or in an environment where he's able to at least understand what the playbook is and actually operate in an environment where he's not going to see a ton of pressure and be able to execute, this was the one for him. And so seeing him be able to peg both not just Ricky Pearsall, but then also Juwan Jennings as well downfield, I think this is the kind of setup that you would wanted for Mac Jones. Let's see just how much longer he's going to have to be under center with Brock Purdy still sitting out because of the toe injury.
Sounds like Brock is unlikely to play in week three. And again, I think that's all right, because this is a guy in Mac Jones that can keep the offense viable. You mentioned a couple of the key players here. Juwan Jennings was targeted on 25.6% of his routes. He had 89 yards and a touchdown thanks to a 42-yard route over the middle that then he just caught it. Like, nobody was around him. And I swear to God, like, I need the max speed for Juwan Jennings on that one. It looked like he was running like 15 miles an hour. And still, yeah, he just like, and I know this guy ran a 4.6 coming to the league. He's not a speed demon, that's not his game, but I was like, where the hell is everybody? Like, nobody, right? just saunters open on down the field. Yeah, just completely wide open. And Pearsall had a couple of impressive plays, and it continues to be a vertical presence in this offense. 16.5 air yards per target for Ricky Pearsall, so he can keep these guys viable. And then CMC, man, I mean, come hell or high water, he's just going to touch the football a ton. 71.4% share of the running back touches in this game, which is right in line for his 2023 usage from weeks 1 to 17, where he was 72.9% share of the running back touches. So the 6 for 52 and a touchdown, it's just like, that's exactly what you want from a pass game usage perspective. So he is going to contend with running back one overall status as long as he's healthy and as long as somebody, you know, I mean, we're not talking about starting like a complete joke under center. Mac Jones is perfectly viable enough to keep this offense humming. Like I said, on the other side here, the Saints are not a good team. Okay. They're not a good offense. But this, Chris, I will continue to say it no matter. Producer Colin is trying to silence me. I will not be silenced on the Saints offense being such a good, bad offense for fantasy football, because they threw 34 passes once again in this game. They played with a lot of tempo. Spencer Rattler, I thought he was high once again, and 70.6% of the targets went to Juwan Johnson, Chris Olave, and Rashid Shaheed. And they all took over 30% of their reps from the slot. Like, again, great usage for these guys. So even if the offense isn't very good, Kamara even got more check down work in this game. Like, it's again, not a good offense, but it's a perfect bad offense for fantasy.
Yeah, and that's where I know when we were talking at the recap show last week, it was Rattler comes out and has 40 plus dropbacks. And I'm like, is this really what Kellen Moore wants to do? And yes, it's actually what Kellen Moore wants to do. Have Spencer Rattler out there, just a 3-5-step drop, hit his back foot, and let it rip. I mean, 2.53 average time to throw for him. I mean, he's just letting it go as soon as he gets to the back of his drop. And of course, I mean, you pointed out Juwan Johnson. I mean, 26.5% target share. I mean, just a massive, productive pass catcher and also one of the most productive pass catchers for Spencer Rattler when he was under duress. And my concern, and we talked about this earlier this morning, my concern was, well, was Johnson's production or his level of opportunity contingent on Kamara still being stifled as a receiver. But we did see Kamara go from 2 targets last week up to 6. I mean, so that level of involvement is something we would like to see. So now this offense is actually clicking, and we can see this type of offense continuing on a week in and week out basis. So I mean, Spencer Rattler, I wouldn't say he's going to be one of the guys that I would want to start from a streaming perspective, but the rest of the pass catchers involved with this offense, like you mentioned, Olave, Johnson, Rashid Shaheen, and Kamara, yeah, those guys I can probably put into my lineup with a decent level of confidence every week.
All right, next game up here, Seahawks 31, Steelers 17. Let's start with the Seahawks here. And I know everybody wants to talk about the backfield. We'll talk about the backfield here in just a second. But I got to say, Chris, I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba might be have been quietly like the best wide receiver in the NFL through 2 weeks. Big statement, but he's been awesome. On just a 26% slot rate, he owns a 44% share of the team yards, and he's averaging 113.5 yards per game. He had a great deep reception in this game where he caught it in tight coverage. He's running so many in-breakers. He's also got 2 passes behind the line of scrimmage in this game. Like this, when I say this all the time, when the Seahawks, like Clint Kubiak, the offensive coordinator there, when this offense feels like it has a dude, they're just going to funnel that guy the football, which is exactly what's happened through the first 2 weeks. Now, Cooper Kupp popped up with 30% target share in this game. That was nice to see after just a 13.6% team target share in week one. But JSN is still the dude making plays downfield, winning outside. I mean, he's just been awesome through 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I guess I would push back on the idea from folks that were concerned with DK Metcalf leaving that JSN couldn't ascend to this level of not just opportunity, but productivity as well. Because we got glimpses of that in the 2024 when Metcalf was out for those 2-3 weeks with like the ankle and lower body injuries. And it wasn't just the fact that the Seahawks were trying to spam a bunch of interior targets to JSN. He was playing both inside and outside. And that was also a part of his collegiate production as well. He wasn't just a slot receiver when he was at Ohio State. So I think this is a scenario where a lot of folks looked at just the overall usage for a guy like JSN without contextualizing some of those routes that he was running when you did have this big-bodied wide receiver in Metcalf as a part of the offense. And so now seeing him have this, what just in this game alone, a third of the targets, and it was good to see Cooper Kupp also getting involved as well, but seeing JSN have this level of opportunity but also being productive as well, I mean, if folks were essentially watching some of that usage when Metcalf wasn't there, I think some folks should have seen this coming, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, Sam Darnold got the ball out quickly in this game. 51.5% of his pass attempts were under 2.5 seconds. And again, that's like JSN on quick hitters, getting Cooper Kupp out the ball in the flat, like just avoiding pressure against a team that has some good players up front, including TJ Watt. That was just, I think, it was kind of a weird week one coaching job by Kubiak, but this to me in the past game was pretty impressive, which transitions perfectly to the run game. Like I said, I know everybody wants to talk about the backfield here. If you were looking for like hey, let's just give Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker like an even shot in week two and see what happens. I mean, Kenneth Walker blew away Zach Charbonnet in this one. Charbonnet still played more snaps and actually got 15 carries to 13 for Walker. But man, the production could not be any more different. Kenneth Walker, 105 yards on 13 carries, 8.1 yards per attempt. He definitely hit the big plays. Zach Charbonnet, 10 yards on just 15 carries. I thought this was interesting too, Chris. 11 carries for 97 yards, 84.6% of his attempts went to the left side, did Kenneth Walker. So they were just like, yeah, TJ Watt's lining up over there. We're going to run that way. And they found a lot of success ripping those big plays with Kenneth Walker on that side of the field.
And at least for me, coming into the season, I figured that Ken Walker would be the beneficiary of this Kubiak blocking scheme. And it's not just the fact that he ran, or at least he used a lot of that when he was still in college, but also it's just the way that Kenneth Walker runs and like how well he is like as from a vision standpoint. In 2024, before he went down, he had one of the highest forced missed tackle rates. I think it was around like 39.9%, somewhere in there. And that was actually one of the highest forced missed tackle rates that I had seen since probably like 2015, somewhere in there. And so also seeing him in this game, about 23% forced missed tackle rate. So that's around like that's in like the top 10-ish rate that you'd want to see for an RB1. That's where you can see 3 to 5 yard gains into 8, 9, 10 yard gains, right? Like where you can see, like, as long as a running back is consistently making the first man miss, some of those shorter area runs can turn into those longer gains. So a guy like Walker that we know has that home run type of speed once he gets out in the open field, that's where you can see those game breaking type of totes that you can see from a guy like Walker. And we saw that today. So while I would still project a level, a decent split between the two of them moving forward. It might be like that David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs type of split. If Walker is now back to being that type, like from a health standpoint, some of that foot stuff from an offseason is gone. I mean, this level of effectiveness, I would at least assume is going to be there for Walker moving forward.
Steelers side of things here. This was a game that I kind of expected from Rodgers going against a good defense that really makes things complicated on the back end and can pressure you. Six different Seahawks defenders had at least one pressure in this game, and they didn't blitz a ton. It was just like, hey, we got pressure with the front four and confuses things on the back end. Rodgers put the ball in harm's way, wasn't consistently accurate. Now, it wasn't all his fault. Calvin Austin kind of made a mistake on one of those interceptions. But just again, when you can force him off his spot when the picture's not perfect, it can be a little bit more difficult. The thing I think is troubling with this passing game right now, beyond the Rodgers stuff, Metcalf's only been targeted on 18.8% of his routes. He had a sweet touchdown against his former team in this one, Chris, but I think if DK Metcalf is going to be like an every week fantasy starter for you, he has to get a lot more targets than he's gotten so far through 2 weeks.
They have the same issue that we were harping on for the Dolphins from last week. I mean, look how many wide receivers or just pass catchers in general had two or more targets in this game. It was Jalen Warren with four, Pat Freiermuth, Jonnu Smith, Calvin Austin, Kenneth Gainwell, Roman Wilson got two targets. I mean, in six pass catchers got two or more just this past week. So my question essentially for the Steelers right now in their offense is Arthur Smith getting a bit too cute? Are we falling into the same trap that we've gone down, or the same road that we've gone down with Arthur Smith in past seasons? So I do have some general concern about DK Metcalf's viability from a fantasy standpoint, because without that volume, it's going to be tough to at least rely on him from a week in, week out standpoint.
Yeah, and in the run game, Jalen Warren put some distance between himself and Kenny Gainwell, and Caleb Johnson once again recorded just one carry and is going to be...
Did you see the kickoff?
Yes, the kickoff return. I mean, it's still a live ball. He like lets it go beyond him, and then that gave the Seahawks a touchdown. So can't see Caleb Johnson climbing the depth chart anytime soon after that mistake that cost his team a touchdown. Let's move on here to Lions 52, Bears 21. Blowout game, but I think we learned a lot in this game, starting with on the Lions side. Guess we don't got to care about this offense's slow start. I mean, they pretty much got whatever they wanted in this game. 7.8 yards per carry for Jahmyr Gibbs, 5.2 yards per carry for David Montgomery, who punches in a goal line touchdown. 5 passing touchdowns for Jared Goff, 3 to Amon-Ra St. Brown, 1 to Jameson Williams caught 2 passes for 108 yards and a touchdown. What a Jameson Williams stat line. And the only thing that was concerning coming out of this game is I believe Sam Laporta is dealing with an injury. I believe he was carted off. Don't have an update on that one. I'm not even sure if he returned to the game or not. But, they got whatever they wanted in this game to the Detroit Lions.
And I think the biggest thing that really doesn't come into on the stat sheet or as relevant for fantasy players is that offensive line. Last week, 0 push from a rushing standpoint for either Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery, almost 0 adjusted yards before contact for Jahmyr Gibbs, almost 2 full yards more in week 2, 1.83 adjusted yards before contact for Gibbs. And that's what that runway that you would need for a guy like him that can be so explosive. So only see him have 1 run of 10 plus yards in week 1, up to 3 just this week against the Bears. I'm a bit more hopeful for not just the Lions running game, but just their entire offense as a whole, because as we were talking earlier about ARSB as the boom player of the week, if Jared Goff is going to get this much time, the offensive line has this much time, or this gets this much push, not just for Goff, but for the running game, we should see some similar production. I don't think it's going to be this level of production, 52 freaking points, but at the same time, around that 30-40 point average that we were seeing in 2024 for sure.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see, go back and watch this game and see if some of the things that were absent in week 1, like the play action, I'll tell you this. Like some of the motion and stuff, I'm not sure off the top of my head, like if that was really back, like motion at the snap, stuff like that. I mean, there were times in this game where I was like, hey, Dennis Allen, you know what a play action fake is? Like, brother, I mean, they were just, the Lions were smoking the Bears on play action. So I thought, again, some of that stuff in week one might have been, and I wrote about this in the column, talked about it in the pod, like some of the lack of play action, lack of motion and stuff could be because they were negative game script last week with Detroit Lions. Not a lot of negative game script in this one. This is really where they were able to lean into all the buttons they like to push. On the Bears side of things, two big takeaways here. The first negative is that the run game is just atrocious. Like, there's two big problems here that the Bears have on offense that, like, beyond, before you even get to like the takesman stuff on Caleb Williams, according to Hayden Winks in this game, the Bears had minus 4.6 EPA per carry. That's a bottom sixth percentile mark, 29% success rate. And then they also just had a ton of pre-snap penalties by the offensive line in this game. I mean, it's just, they had 9 plays with 15 plus yards to go. That's the most in the NFL. Just, it's like you can't function as an offense that way. So before you even talk about some of the passing game stuff, that is a big problem. And it's just like, you guys walked into week one with like DeAndre Swift as your starting running back. What did you expect to happen, Chris? That to me is one of the biggest issues in this offense, that because of the hyper fixation on Williams in the passing game, that's going to get lost in the discussion here.
And the Bears had a number of procedural penalties in their week one opener against the Vikings. I mean, this can't continue to happen. I mean, this was the same team or this with the same head coach that throughout most of the offseason was stressing details. You had to be down, had to understand the flow of the offense and be able to get folks in the right position pre-snap and all of that. And now it's 2 weeks in a row that they're behind the sticks, or well behind the sticks, from a yardage standpoint because of some of those errors, of those mental errors. So I do have some general concerns about what's going to happen, like with this passing game offense, but at least we're still seeing some production from Caleb Williams and of course some production to Rome Odunze as well.
Yes, that's the positive takeaway here, that through 2 weeks, Rome Odunze is averaging 20.5 points per game, team high 80 routes, 42.2% share of the air yards, 29.9% target share, 3 end zone targets so far through 2 weeks, 3 touchdowns. He's had 3 touchdowns all of last year as a rookie. And the worst part, the good bad part is that, like, Chris, he should have had even more. Like, he left a couple of plays on the field in this game. He had a couple of drops, like, back-to-back on one drive that, like, he's got to start bringing those in. Once he does, like, man, the sky really is the limit, because it's clear, like, both from the usage and watching this team, that they're setting him up to be the lead dog right now. I mean, that was what I thought was going to happen, but I think it's been kind of confirmed here through 2 weeks.
And seeing how he's been used, because really just two targets from the slot, if I remember correctly, from this game against the Lions, and also how like the amount of timing and rapport that he has with Caleb Williams, because a lot of those shots that he was getting from Caleb Williams were on some of those outbreakers towards the sideline. And you know, just as well as anybody, that requires a level of connection with your quarterback in order to make a lot of those completions. And so if this is the type of usage that we should see from not just from Caleb, but from Rome, I mean, let's see what happens when he starts getting shorter area throws, some of those layup type targets, or those routes as well. See him used across the middle of the field a bit more, because if he's doing so well and being so effective as a boundary receiver, essentially was what he was here for the Bears this week. I mean, give him some of that other stuff that DJ Moore has been receiving, and I'm assuming that he'll really be cooking after that.
Yeah, Olamide Zaccheaus so far leads the team with 11 targets from the slot through 2 weeks, but Rome is second with 6. So a little bit mixed from the usage perspective. But yeah, very impressed with the start from him so far. Catch a couple more of those balls today, and we're talking about it's hard to get better than 128 yards and 2 touchdowns, but would have been an even bigger day potentially for the second year wideout. Next 3 games here all happened in the late window, so we're still kind of letting these, especially because they all ended in pretty wild formats, they were still kind of letting these wash over us. But first one up is Colts 29, Broncos 28, Chris. The Colts are 2-0, baby. Danny Dimes' run continues. And I got to say, this was more impressive. Forget the production. This was more impressive in week two here than what we saw in week one because of the opponent. And like, man, I mean, this is what, like, this offense is just so well designed, and they have so many playmakers, and the protection's good, Chris. Like, I'm starting to kind of buy in on this Danny Dimes revival season. Are you able to talk me off the ledge at all?
I can't, and now I have to issue an apology to Shane Steichen, man. After so many blunders and asking so many questions about why couldn't he design a more efficient offense around Anthony Richardson, and to see, okay, maybe against the Dolphins and just the complete chaos that they're going through right now, okay, fine, you get that one. But this, I mean, I get it. Patrick Surtain was in and out of the game because of the ankle injury that he suffered, so they were down like their best pass coverage defender. But still, I mean, they still have monsters across the defensive front, and Daniel Jones was still cooking them. He was still able to get out there and pass to Tyler Warren. I mean, he had a shot play down, like down the left-hand side, if I remember correctly, to Alec Pierce. That went for 44 yards. I mean, it didn't matter like which pass catch we were talking about. Each of them had at least productive enough games that I at least now have to look at Shane Steichen and kind of reassess how I'm looking at him from a offensive design standpoint. So hats off to Steichen. And of course, I would have to give my kudos to Daniel Jones, because coming into this game, I was assuming it was going to be multiple sacks, multiple turnovers, and really not haven't seen them be able to move the ball. But both him and Jonathan Taylor were able to put up quite a bit of production against this Denver defense.
Here's the stat. This is the stat from this game that just shows you how well designed and well constructed this offense is. That, and if you're just a normal quarterback, which Anthony Richardson just wasn't playing like a normal quarterback last year, like not even close. Jones was blitzed on a career high 71.1% of his dropbacks, according to NFL Pro, completed 16 of 25 for 265 yards and a touchdown. Like, there's just answers on answers on answers. And there was a lot of tight window passes in this game, 4 tight window completions for 41 yards against Patrick Surtain. So like, they went after Surtain in this one, because they can just move the guys around the formation. Very impressive. And certainly this was a nice little bounce back game from, you know, not a major one, but Josh Downs gets a little bit more involved here. 6 for 50 on 8 targets. So that's good to see. Everybody just had their moments, which is why this team is going to be tough to play against. On the Broncos side of things, I don't know. Anything stand out to you too much from Denver here? I mean, this was the one thing to me that was notable was Troy Franklin took a big step forward in terms of playing time, and he had 8 catches for 89 yards. He is certainly someone, and a touchdown, I'm certainly excited to review this week, because he really took a step forward in terms of, like, is there a number 2 receiver in this offense? Maybe that guy is Troy Franklin, who by all accounts had a great offseason with this team.
Yeah, and that's where I'm somewhat concerned about some of the other guys that we were hoping would have larger roles in this offense. I mean, Evan Engram, just 2 targets, really didn't see him getting involved until essentially the second half, when things were more like, are they going to win? Are the Denver going to win? Or is the Colts going to pull this one out? So I guess Troy Franklin would probably be the guy, if we're talking about actionable fantasy advice, that if he's out there on your waiver wire, I would put in the claim for him. I'm not going to spend a ton of my bid money for him, but without seeing a ton more production, or at least opportunity for some of the other folks, Marvin Mims only getting 2 targets, and of course Cortland Sutton sitting down there at 4, I do have at least some, I would say, I'm just unsure about what this passing offense is supposed to look like with seeing 2 very different data points between week 1 and week 2.
Next one up here, Eagles 20, Chiefs 17. I don't come away feeling real good about either of these offenses in this one, Chris. And I mean, like, the Chiefs are just, their personnel stinks around Mahomes right now. Like, I'm sorry to say, but like, that's just the reality. And like, I know that they'll get guys back, of course, but like, their personnel stinks. What was your takeaway watching the Eagles in this game?
I was really concerned about the Eagles offense, because I thought this was going to be a game where, okay, depending on how you viewed AJ Brown's performance in week 1, if you thought the offseason hamstring injury was going to be slow him down a bit, at the very least, Devonta Smith should be able to take advantage of this Chiefs secondary. And yes, 6 targets, but only 4 for 53 from a passing game standpoint. I know he did wind up getting evaluated for a concussion midway through the game, but still not a lot of work or not a lot of production there for him. Of course, AJ Brown has another dud performance, even with the 8 targets. And of course, it's not like Jalen Hurts had his clock was sped up. I mean, the number of passing plays you could see for him where he had all day behind that Eagles offensive line. And I'm just now, I do have at least some level of concern about what this passing game offense is going to look. Of course, Saquon Barkley gets his, but if this is the game where we thought that the Eagles would be able to get over on the secondary, because we just saw this happen about 7 months ago in the Super Bowl, how can we, I guess, increase or like I guess, change our expectations, have more positive expectations for the Eagles passing game moving forward. I just don't see it.
Just one completion for over 10 air yards in this game, which was the Devontae's awesome catch by Devontae Smith against Trent McDuffie in coverage. Like, that was sweet, but that was it. Like, that's the only cool play that's I have it, to talk about from the passing game. So that definitely deserves a deep dive. And it's like on my radar that, you know, Kellen Moore leaves and he's bringing all this fun stuff to New Orleans with a bunch of like whatever players down there. And the Eagles are kind of looking a little lackluster without him. So we shall see if that continues. On the Chiefs side of things, man, it's just like, I don't even know what to say. Like, they just, like, Tyquan Thornton has one sick catch. It's like, unless Mahomes is doing crazy stuff, this offense is just like unwatchable at this point. And honestly, it might, the fact that Mahomes has, doesn't have like Xavier Worthy, who might come back next week, it doesn't have Rashee Rice, who they knew Rashee Rice was getting suspended. Anyway, they still walk in here with this like weird looking receiver core. Like, the depth is not very good. Like, we're playing Juju Smith-Schuster again in 2025. What are we doing? Like, it actually might make him a better fantasy quarterback because he's scrambling so much. So, like, in a weird way, less receiving talent might have been good for Mahomes in fantasy, which kind of breaks the brain, but in a way, because of the scrambling, does make sense.
Well, in 2022 and 2023, before a lot of the offensive line issues started to creep up for the Chiefs, Mahomes was deadly as a scrambler. And I think a lot of folks kind of took that for granted just because his passing acumen and skill set was just so otherworldly. But seeing him from an EPA standpoint, he was probably one of the more efficient scramblers once he got out into the open field. And so seeing that as becoming a larger part of his game, while I'm hoping that the pass production comes back for him, I mean, he had that deep shot, I think, I forget who it was to. It might have been to Tyquan Thornton or it might have been to Hollywood, where, I mean, it's just completely whiffed on the throw. And I think that one was the one that wound up turning into an interception. But I'm hoping in the, like, as things move forward, they do wind up having a better, I guess, design for this offense. Because, yeah, I mean, five targets to Hollywood Brown. I mean, we knew he was going to be in that short area target role for him. But I think the larger concern, honestly, man, is what's this backfield rotation going to look like? I mean, Isaiah Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, I mean, terrible. Isaiah Pacheco, neither of them productive. We saw it's Hunt out there on fourth down. I think I got to be out on Pacheco here moving forward.
Yeah. Until he owns like all the backfield touches, you got to be out, man, because it's just like this run game is like, they have two good interior offensive linemen. They have Creed Humphrey and they have Trey Smith. Both of these guys are highly paid. Juwan Taylor remains kind of a mess at right tackle. Josh Simmons is a rookie left tackle. Like, him just walking in here and being a top 10 player at the position, like, that's pretty tough to expect. And Kingsley Suamatia has been like kind of up and down as that left guard for them as well. So it's just, it's going to take a moment here for this offensive line to, like, again, the Chiefs will be fine. They'll probably be in the damn Super Bowl again. When they get these guys healthy, it'll be better. But right now, like, this is what the unit is, and we just don't need to act surprised by it. And I'm not really gassed up to play anybody in fantasy other than Mahomes right now in this offense. All right, that is going to do it for the games that we sort of care about, and we'll be back right after this quick break. Now let's rapid fire it here into the games that could have been an email, and we've got three very emaily games, starting with Rams 33, Titans 19. Sick touchdown pass by Cam Ward in this game here, buddy. He rifled a throw across the body. It's like, don't ever do that again, but that was sweet. Other than that, the Rams just kind of did whatever they want in this game.
And another game where Cam Ward is running from his life more often than not. I mean, over 40% of his dropbacks, he wound up facing pressure. Another game with multiple sacks. So hopefully in the near future, they won't have as tough of an out from a defensive front standpoint. But I would say overall, some of the stuff we saw from Ward is enough to at least make me at least optimistic. And especially when you've got wide receivers like Ridley and Aiyemenor on the opposite side of those throws, I think there's going to be better days ahead for Cam Ward.
The one fantasy note, because, I mean, hey, Davante Adams was awesome. Bunch of air yards, 13 targets. Puka Nacua continues to just be a complete and total machine at the wide receiver position. His rushing touchdown, like, was probably the best run from a Rams player in, I don't know, 3 years, which brings me to my
Todd Gurley. Next.
Yeah, right. Since like Todd Gurley was doing his thing. Which brings me to my point here. Adam Grossbard reports that Sean McVay said the split between Kyren Williams and Blake Corum, 69.5% to 30.5% respectively, was much more in alignment with how he wants the Rams backfield to look. which is kind of what they said in the offseason, what they've been saying for a while. We'll see if it holds, but that definitely gives you some pause on the Kyren Williams stuff if you're expecting it to be a clear-cut fantasy starter going forward. Next game up here, Ravens 41, Browns 17. If you told me the Ravens were going to score 41 points and Derrick Henry was somehow going to... I have Derrick Henry on a couple fantasy teams. I was like, ooh, I can't wait to check in. Derrick Henry has like no points? Like, what are we doing here? 23 rushing yards? But Lamar was just, again, doing whatever he wanted in this game to a good Browns defense. So it didn't exactly like go to Mark Andrews, of course. I know. Devontae Walker had a couple of touchdowns in this game, but Zay Flowers continued to Tylan Wallace gets in the mix here. Even Rashad Bateman couldn't get involved. What the hell, man? So again, 41 points though. It was the Lamar show in this one. And then the Browns, man, this is what happens with the Browns and Joe Flacco go against a good defense. He averages under 5 yards per pass attempt, and kind of the shine comes off on some of these passing game players.
I'd say the worst part was just seeing that touchdown catch to Mark Andrews get peanut punched right out of his hands. I mean, shout out to Grant Delpit, who put out there on Twitter earlier in the week that it was easy to tackle Derrick Henry. So maybe he was right, you know? I think it was less than he had like negative adjusted yards before contact this week, so they didn't allow Henry to get that runway he needs in order to get to top speed and have those breakaway runs. So I mean, credit where it's due. I mean, they did wind up getting their doors blown off, but at least it wasn't by Derrick Henry.
Yeah, congratulations. Like, what do you want, a participation trophy? You stopped Derrick Henry and you still got blown off the field by a significantly better ball club. One other thing in this game, David Njoku and the Harold Fannin split continues to be a little even. 5 targets for both of those guys in this game. Next game up, Bills 30, Jets 10. We'll always have that week one with Justin Fields in this Jets offense. It was not going well. Fields, the ball placement was really poor in this game, and then he ultimately leaves it with a concussion later on in the game, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, that was almost the whole offense turned back into a pumpkin. It was midnight for the Jets already in week 2. But I would say from a rushing standpoint, at least we have 5 for 49ers or rushers, so able to make up for some of that. But just seeing so many misplaced passes, I mean, his level of efficiency, I mean, negative 0.87 EPA per drop back for Fields. After seeing such positive gains from that standpoint, I mean, sure, if you've got Garrett Wilson on your roster, you have 38.1% target rate for Garrett Wilson, 47.7% share of the air yards. But if this is going to be the amount of efficiency from the quarterbacks, whether it's Tyrod next week, if the concussion holds for Fields over the next couple of weeks, or at least for week 3, and you do have to have some general concerns about what this identity or even just the level of productivity for this Jets offense is going to be moving forward.
Just hold on to something while I read off one of the most atrocious stats of the entire week. Oh, again, according to Next Gen Stats, Justin Fields finished with a minus 41.6% completion percentage over expected. That's the lowest in the NFL since at least 2016. So, like, I really made an effort to publicly flog myself for buying too much into the preseason, like, in training camp counting stats for Justin Fields. I mean, this was what they were warning us about. 3 of 11. That looked like 3 of 11. That looked like the training camp reports, honestly. So, man, very disappointing against a Bills defense that got smoked and pushed around in week 1, especially for Breece Hall to not get anything. Just quickly on the Bills, you know, they were just, they kind of cruised to a win here, but the passing game was much more spread out. Like, a bunch of guys show up in the box score here, which is, I think, a little bit more what we should expect from this team. I don't think anyone will emerge as like the clear alpha dog here, which is kind of what they want. Last game to talk about here, and I feel so bad because we actually had this game in the games we sort of care about, not a game that could have been an email. Although, Chris, like, maybe that was part of me, like, subconsciously. I skipped Cardinals 27, Panthers 22, because at one point I was like, oh, this game is the biggest email game of all time. The Panthers are a joke. They're getting blown out. But they actually came back and kind of made this thing competitive. So it was a little bit closer than a full-scale email game. Even if the Panthers were giving off, this game should have been an email energy for about 85% of the contest.
Brother, Tetero McMillan, grown man type wide receiver.
Good football player.
Good football player. And not just the strong hands, but the yards after the catch as well. I mean, leading the team with 10 targets. We wanted a wide receiver one, the profile from a wide receiver one for Bryce Young. And we saw that hands down in this particular matchup. So, of course, it's sad that they didn't wind up getting the win. But I walked into this game having at least some concerns about what this offense or just the pass game production would be for McMillan. Just seeing how, I would say, volatile, for lack of a better term, that Bryce Young is under center. But in this game, I at least from that standpoint, seeing Bryce Young put on at least have some of those back end of 2024 flashes against the Cardinals, at least have a bit more confidence for both him and McMillan for the rest of the season.
Three big like in-breaking targets down the football field, and then just like pop, 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 a bunch of short stuff on the out-breaking route. So exact type of usage that works well with Bryce Young, that works really well with Tetero McMillan's game. I will say on the negative side for the Panthers, and there's a lot of negative to say about the Panthers, but we might be pretty close to enough already territory with Xavier Legette. 8 targets, 1 catch for -2 yards.
Yeah,
I know that's not all his fault, but like, but that's pretty tough. That's good news for the Coker Bros, myself included. That's good news for us there. Cardinals are the Cardinals, typical like up and down performance. Kyler Murray throws one interception that's just like, dude, just eat that sack. Dick, what do you need to be putting that ball? It was the ultimate what are you doing interception. And Marvin Harrison Jr. he drops one pass, but also just kind of gets sacrificed to J.C. Horn in this game. So I think there will be better days ahead for Marvin Harrison in this passing game, but they'll always be a little bit frustrating are the Cardinals. But again, I didn't mean to totally shortchange that game, Chris, but it was an email game for the vast majority of it, so I think we kind of split the difference, giving it its shine. Bryce Young throws 3 touchdowns. That was cool. Mm-hmm. Didn't expect that in the middle of the game, but it was a bit of an email game. But man, Chris, week 2, what a wild slate. This one was this one was crazy, man.
And so many plot lines coming out of it, the Joe Burrow injury, I'd say the comeback, or at least let's say return to some normalcy for the Dolphins passing game. And of course, the same thing for the Panthers, as you were just talking about. So I'm sure there's going to be a ton of storylines that we're going to have to follow into week 3. But at least for the most part, we have some excitement and some things to worry about from a fantasy standpoint. So no, good football all around, I'd say, for week 2. And of course, we've got at least the Sunday night matchup and 2 more on Monday. So I'm here for it, man.
Oh man, yes, so much football to go. But yes, so many things to chew on coming out of Sunday's week 2 slate. And I know you guys are panicking out there, so please make sure you tweet at me or Justin Boone if you want to be featured in the People's Panic Meter. But the best way to do it, okay, forget social media, forget Twitter, whatever. The best way to get your submission in is to email us fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Voice memos and videos are encouraged, but if you just want to write out your feelings, hit the email lineup and let us know what you are panicking about, because that's going to do it for today's show. Justin Boone, as I said, will join me for the People's Panic Meter on Monday. So much to panic out about in the fantasy streets coming out of week 2. So hit that email line. Be sure to get your submissions in by 2 p.m. Eastern on Monday as we go live at 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.